I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show on this Friday night, the fastest 2 hours in radio, as the NFL, the college football conversation, will continue. And right now it is time to catch up with our NFL insider, and that is the former first-round draft pick with the Carolina Panthers, Jason Peter. Good evening, Jason. It's good to have you with us tonight.
How you doing, E?
Well, I'm great. It's only 2 weeks away before the preseason gets underway. That is hard to believe. And I am anxious to get your pulse, your preview on your former team with the Panthers. They're coming off their first playoff appearance in 5 years. Are they going to be a contender, or are they going to still be a pretender?
Well, if history tells us anything, it's not going to be a great year for Carolina. No team has won the NFC South in back-to-back years, ever. And Carolina, obviously, won the division last year. So if you look into the history books, it's not going to fare well for them. But there's always a first time, I guess. And, you know, certainly I think they're built, you know, to make another run. A lot like every team in the NFL, which is a quarterback-driven league, has to do with the signal caller, and that's Cam Newton. And, you know, will he be able to keep taking those steps forward, or will he hit a wall like a lot of quarterbacks do? I mean, he's still a young guy, and he's going to make mistakes. But you know, there's certainly going to be a different feel to this team. You know, Steve Smith, who was there when I was there, you know, he's now gone, and he's been kind of that locker room guy. You know, I feel like Steve was still making plays. He was still a guy who could help the Panthers, but I think in order for Carolina to maybe go to that next level, they need not new leadership, but the guy that they want to be in control in the locker room, on the field. I think that's obviously Cam Newton. And it's tough when you've had a guy that's been there for, you know, 10 plus years. You know, how do you have a young quarterback be that leader when you've got that guy in the locker room? So now with Steve gone, I think they're going to have great expectations. Not that they haven't already for Cam, but I think they're going to be looking for him to raise not just his level on the field, but I just think the overall impact that he has on the entire franchise.
You know, Jason, you bring up a number of great points, and in hour one, we were talking with our very own Sean Salisbury, who, of course, spent 10 years as a quarterback in the NFL, and I had asked him, you know, what does it take to be a winning quarterback in this league? And so let's kind of hit on in terms of with Cam Newton, his success, his maturity. We are continuing to see him evolve. What has been the key to that? Do you think it's been in terms of simplifying the offense?
I just think it's he's matured. If listeners remember, it was just a couple years ago when he would have a bad game and you'd see this guy show up in the post game pressers, and you know, just head down, answering questions with one and two word answers, and you just can't be that guy, at least anymore. You know, there's just too much media out there, there's too much coverage, there are too many questions being asked to just go into a presser and, you know, have your head down and mumble answers. That's not what fans want. It's not what, you know, teammates want. It's not what ownership wants, especially when you are kind of that face of the franchise. They're paying you a lot of money to be that guy, and I think he made a lot of improvement in that area last year. And you know, like I said before, I'm sure they're looking at him to make even more. You know, the guy he's a physical freak. I mean, he's as big as some defensive lineman in the NFL. But you know, he runs like a wide receiver. He's got moves like a running back. You know, he's got a cannon for an arm. It all has to do with above the shoulders with Cam Newton. That's everything. It's understanding the offense. It's you know, when you need to be vocal, when not. You know, all of these things that go into being a guy, and let's face it, I mean, every NFL team hopes that their signal caller will eventually turn into either the guy that's calling plays up in New England or the guy that's out in Denver. Those are the two kind of the two players in the league that every team hopes their guy will turn out to be like. Obviously, they're different types of quarterbacks, but just in terms of the importance and the impact that he has on their, you know, respective teams.
Sure. Jason Peter with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We'd love for you to connect with us online at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. And as we zero in on the Carolina Panthers and quarterback Cam Newton, do you think, Jason, that he perhaps had too much responsibility those first two seasons?
You know, it's hard to say. Every team, every coach deals with it a different way, and obviously circumstances surrounding each team, I think, dictates how they're going to approach young quarterbacks. You see some guys get thrown right into the fire. You know, Robert Griffin kind of got thrown right into the fire and succeeded his first year, and then obviously, you know, had an injury, but second year, not even close to what happened in the first year. And, you know, Cam was a guy who kind of got thrown into the fire as well. But then you see other guys that are able to spend some time. You know, the Aaron Rodgers, he obviously is somebody that a lot of people point to when that topic of discussion comes up, whether or not you play a quarterback right away or not. You know, I think, you know, the chances are that it will benefit a guy. Now, I don't know if you want him to sit on the bench, let's say, like Aaron Rodgers did for 4 or 5 years, but most teams don't have Brett Favre as their starting quarterback. So it's just hard. You know, Andrew Luck, who came in and kind of took the league by storm, and it's just, I don't know if you can answer that, you know, one answer for everybody. I think you have to look at it on an individual basis. And Carolina, when Cam first got there, they're, you know, they weren't the greatest team in the world, and I guess they just felt like what they were going to ask him to do, he could handle it. And I don't think any coaching staff or organization goes in thinking, you know, let's just throw this guy to the fire so, you know, we destroy his mentality for, you know, the next 3 or 4 years of his life so that we get no value out of this guy. I think they're all kind of dealing with it from the moment that he walks in the door. They're always kind of evaluating in terms of, you know, the maturity level, the athleticism, how he's grasping the playbook, how his teammates, are, you know, with him, how he responds to his teammates. I mean, there's a lot of things that teams are always watching when they bring in new players.
Former NFL and Husker great Jason Peter is with us tonight with our Under the Helmet segment. He joins us each and every week. Hey, Jay, we just got to take a quick commercial break and we'll be rejoined. We'll talk some more as we get ready for the start of the 2014 NFL season. Okay, we are back at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. I'm Elissa Walker-Campbell. We love hearing from you. Join us online at Twitter, at eRadio Sports. And remember, twice is always nice. We want to direct you to our podcast page, and that is yahoosportsradio.com/podcast. Well, we are very anxious because the NFL preseason, it is just 2 weeks away. And before we went to commercial break, we were visiting with Jason Peter talking about Cam Newton, how he is trending in the right direction, his keys to success. You know, we'd hit on even Jason talking about the coaches perhaps are putting him in a better position to succeed. And you really do have to tip your hat to Mike Shula because I like what he's doing with this quarterback.
Yeah, Mike Shula is a guy who, I mean, he's been there since, I think, 2011. And, you know, the way that offenses are going, you know, like I mentioned, Brady and Manning earlier, I mean, those guys are not necessarily what teams are looking for nowadays in terms of athleticism. They want guys that can get out of the pocket and run, even though you know, history has shown us that real mobile guys you know, haven't won Super Bowls. Now maybe they can get you far in the playoffs, but in terms of winning the big one, you know, the Mike Vicks and guys like that haven't you know, been as dominant as you know, the Bradys and Mannings, but certainly the trend is going to the dual threat, and you know, Mike Shula has that with Cam, and you know, the offense is going to be under a lot of scrutiny. Like everybody says, it doesn't matter who you have at the signal caller or the running backs. It all starts up front. And Carolina, you know, loses one of their rocks on the offensive line, you know, with the retirement of Jordan Gross, who decided that was it, I guess. And, you know, it will be interesting to see how they can replace him. You know, but in my mind, it doesn't matter who you have up front, or I mean, it doesn't matter who you have, calling plays if you can't block guys and you can't give quarterbacks time or open up the right holes. It doesn't matter. You know, it's an old saying that every player is heard, probably every fan is heard nowadays. But it all starts up front, whether you're talking offense or defense.
Well, and that certainly is one of the biggest criticisms in terms of with the Carolina Panthers. What are your thoughts on the offensive line and also on the secondary?
It's you know, it's hard. I mean, is there a dominant player up front? Not necessarily, but you know, you're talking about the NFL where there's talent on every team, and it's, you know, the biggest thing I think for the long-term success and being able to have a successful season and make a run in the playoffs, do your guys stay healthy? You know, are you going to lose two or three starters? And how is your depth?
Right.
The guy that, you know, is going to swing from left tackle to right tackle, can he come in? And how big of a let-off is there going to be from your backup to the starter, because he might have to carry you for three or four games until that starter is ready to come back. So, you know, health is, I think every head coach in the NFL will tell you, you know, if he could have one thing go in his favor for the entire year, it would be injuries, because they can completely decimate a team.
Well, Cam Newton certainly has been a very big narrative when you talk about the Carolina Panthers. But, Jay, I'd love for you to just kind of give some credit to their head coach, Ron Rivera, because what NFL Coach of the Year last year, what a feel-good story after they got off to that 1-3 start and then finished 11-1.
Well, yeah, I mean, people wanted Ron Rivera gone. And what a difference a year makes, because it wasn't too long ago. It was just an off season ago where a lot of Panther fans, they wanted a new coach. And it's a testament to Jerry Richardson. You know, I can speak about him till I'm blue in the face. He is a guy that is extremely loyal, and you know, he'll like to give you every benefit of the doubt. Obviously, you know, they're dealing with some stuff down there right now with the whole Greg Hardy thing and
very unfortunate
domestic violence. Sure,
yeah.
And it's something that's obviously very, very sensitive to that community and that franchise with some of the stuff that's happened in the past. But Ron Rivera has done a tremendous job. But, you know, it's the NFL. So you're only as good as your last game. And, you know, if they end up going, 7-9, there's going to be people that are calling for his job.
We've been giving you the pulse, the preview on Jason Peters' former team, the Carolina Panthers, and obviously a number of areas that we're keeping our eye on. But I just have to wonder, you know, is this a franchise set up to have sustainable success and to win consistently? Jason, it's been a pleasure to have you with us on this Friday night. And I know you're gearing up for the start of the NFL season. Always exciting. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Much more straight ahead at Yahoo Sports Radio and the Big E Sports Show. Join us online at Twitter at @eRadioSports, and we will be right back with much more. Okay, Lissa Walker-Campbell taking you through the fastest 2 hours in radio, and it is time now to focus our attention on the wonderful world of golf and the British Open. No doubt, tons of storylines that we're going to get into, obviously, with the return of Tiger Woods, his return to major championship golf. And it's not just Tiger, it is star-studded with so many of the game's finest. There is a very glamorous group, to say the least. And so tonight, we are headed out, actually, to Hilton Head. We're going to visit with Kevin Smeltz. He is from the Ledbetter Golf Academy. He is also the co-author of the Ledbetter Golf Academy Handbook. It is a compelling read, and we're looking forward to highlighting that in tonight's show. Good evening, Kevin. It's nice to have you with us.
Great. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
You bet.
How are you?
Oh, hey, listen, I'm fantastic, and our first order of business is we want to get your thoughts on this year's Open and find out who stands out perhaps to win the Open title. I know that much of the conversation has certainly centered around Tiger Woods, his return, but I have to tell you, at the top of my list is Adam Scott. I mean, this is a ball striker's course, and I think he can really thrive.
It is. It's a very strategic course, Obviously, listening to some of the players' interviews, they really enjoy the layout. Adam Scott actually said that it was the way it was laid out was amazing, and the course set up. So he's obviously been playing good. I certainly would think he was a favorite. Rory McIlroy has kind of been coming into form a little bit, not quite to where he was. And then obviously a lot of talk around Tiger, so it'll be great to see how he plays.
Well, talking about Adam Scott, I mean, let's not forget, I mean, he's had finished, what, top three in the British Open over the past 2 years. So he certainly, I have to share, he is one of my favorites. But I have to ask you, being with the Ledbetter, the Golf Academy, I mean, what is the right way to prepare for these championships? What's the winning formula, Kevin?
Well, certainly, I mean, you know, the thing about any major championship, even if it's with junior golf, you know, kind of a junior golf's major or the traditional major for the professionals, you know, they're going to test you in all areas. I mean, that's the whole goal, is to see how you're prepared in all areas, whether it's the mental side, the physical side. Obviously, mentally, the Open Championship or the British Open can be pretty challenging because you're not quite sure what the weather's going to be like. So, you know, you can kind of experience all four seasons in one round of golf occasionally. So mentally, you've got to really be prepared. And obviously, the course setup, the links courses are different, where you can kind of bounce the ball a little short and run it up on the green. So for the Americans that don't play that quite so often, it takes a little bit more preparation with regards to hitting different shots and preparing in ways that they're not really accustomed to on a weekly basis.
Well, I have to say, I mean, it is a complicated task because it really is up to the individual. I mean, we've seen in years past, you know, heading into a major championship, I mean, what Tiger Woods, he took a week off before the Masters. Phil Mickelson, he likes to play tournaments the week prior. I mean, both have green jackets. But, I mean, it's different for every guy. It's different for every individual, isn't it?
You're right. It really is. You know, some people are more technical. Some people are more kind of kinesthetic or feel-oriented. So you're more technical people tend to analyze things more. They tend to want to make sure they're prepared. you know, preparation is the key, and kind of you're more kinesthetic people. I'm generalizing, obviously, but, you know, they kind of want to play their way into it, so to speak. So some people want to be prepared kind of in a range setting, you know, to make sure they've got all their ducks in a row, and some people want to play their way in and have the competitive juices going the week before.
Kevin Smeltz is joining us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. He is with the Ledbetter Golf Academy, and we're going to talk about the new handbook that they have just released here momentarily. But obviously, at the top of, you know, our interview, all eyes are obviously on Tiger, wondering, you know, can he win the British Open? 2014 has not been his year, with the back surgery gone for almost 3 months. I thought he did very well in his first day back on Thursday. But typically, when you've not played a lot of golf, I mean, how long does it take for you to kind of, you know, chip off that rust and get back into form and get back into shape?
Yeah, obviously from an end, you know, it's almost a little different if you've been taking some time off, if you've been working, or if you've had an injury. Obviously injury, sometimes it takes a little bit longer. Sometimes if it's a surgery situation, sometimes you can almost feel better than you were before. So it's a little bit case by case, but definitely it takes some time to knock the rust off. The touch and feel of the short game can be challenging, obviously, to get that going, but obviously there's more things happening in the full swing. You know, it's obviously a much, much bigger arc, and your body's rotating more and shifting more and things of that nature. So it takes a little time. It takes some work, that's for sure.
How tough has it been to watch? I mean, you're talking about Woods. I mean, the greatest golfer of this era. I mean, what is your belief in terms of can he recapture the magic? He certainly has spoiled us throughout the years.
Yeah, he has, for sure. I think he can if his body's healthy. You know, sometimes surgery seems like a harsh way to go, but sometimes it's the best way to go because you can kind of get back to the form you were before a little faster, as opposed to nursing injuries and maybe they act up again or something of that nature. So let's hope he does. That's for sure. He's been a big boost to this great game. That's for sure.
Well, he certainly has, you know, his share of critics, but you can't forget, this is Tiger Woods. He has not forgotten how to win. He's not forgotten how to compete. I guess, really, though, you know, you're talking about just the back surgery and his return. I mean, I guess it's really about learning how to trust your body again.
I think so, for sure. I mean, it'd be human instinct to be swing kind of tentatively a little bit at first, not quite sure how whether it's rehab or surgeries will have gone, and how your back or hip or whatever it is that you've hurt is going to react. So it takes a little bit of time to get your speed back and mentally to know that, okay, I can go at this 100%. I can compete the way I want and not have to worry about it being hurt.
Hey, another quick question about Tiger Woods before we transition and highlight your new handbook that is out from the Ledbetter Golf Academy. Kevin Smeltz is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio. When you step back and just talk about all the contributions and what Tiger Woods has meant to the game of golf, how much does the game need him? It's great to have him back.
It is. It does need him. It probably doesn't need him quite as much as it did 10 years ago. I know that sounds funny to say because ratings go down, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, the thing that Tiger has done is he's raised the bar, and he's brought more people into the game. He's brought more athletes into the game. So I think the younger kids, I think Tiger would say the same thing, the younger generation's getting a little bit better earlier, peaking a little earlier.
Sure.
So with the advent of that, we still obviously need him, but might not be quite as drastic as it was a few years ago, but certainly for the average player and the weekend watchers, so to speak, the TV ratings skyrocket when he's in a tournament.
Well, and I'm sure you'll agree, too, talking about these younger players that are coming up, that intimidation factor, it's diminished during his six-year, his winless drought of a major.
It has. You know, I mean, it's you'd step on the tee before, you'd see PGA Tour players walk into their kind of spot to hit some balls, and everyone would kind of stop and kind of look at them and try to maybe get a little bit of information and a little knowledge of what he was doing. And, you know, that intimidation factor is gone just a little bit. And the fact that the younger players, you know, some of the younger players that are just coming out, like a Brooks Koepka or something like that, someone like that who's been playing really well, a young guy. I mean, he hasn't really played against Tiger when Tiger's been at his peak. So he doesn't quite understand what an Ernie Els or Phil Mickelson, you know, talks about when they say that.
Kevin Smeltz is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, and it is time now. We're going to highlight the new book that you co-authored. It is titled The Ledbetter Golf Academy Handbook, Techniques and Strategies. I love the fact you have five sections. You've divided it all out. Kind of give us a rundown, a layout of the book, Kevin.
Sure. Well, we obviously want to make it productive for all levels of players, all demographics, and and make it interesting and differentiate it a little bit. So we've put a lot of different sections in there. We've got obviously full swing, all elements of the short game, the putting, chipping, pitching, bunker, trouble shots, you know, whether it's uphill lie, downhill lie, hitting out a pine straw, hitting out a divot. There's a junior golf section. There's a fitness section. And then one of the other things we did was we had tour players, some major champions, some Hall of Famers, do interviews for us in the book. So, for example, the pivot motion. So I wrote about, okay, your body needs to turn at this angle and, you know, more of the technical stuff, how right, it rotates, right, how it shifts, et cetera. And then we interviewed, for that particular section, Charles Howell III, who said, you know, well, my pivot's always, or my swing's always been kind of pivot-driven. Those are the swing keys that I've always used over the years, et cetera. And then he, you know, some of the tour players will give a kind of couple tips for the weekend warriors, what they see in pro-ams and how they can improve. So we've got a kind of both ends of the spectrum, so to speak.
Well, I love the fact, too, you have so many awesome photographs within the book, and there's a number of things that you do address. You're talking about position, balance. But as a mother of two junior golfers, there's obviously some great information on there. Give us a quick kick before we go to commercial break on what you did share in terms of junior golf and the advice that you give out to parents.
I think the way they can practice. You know, I mean, unfortunately, golf, some of it because of the logistics, but golf's the only real sport that you practice differently than the way you play. So if you take your kids to basketball practice, they'll warm up, do some stretching, do some sprints, some bounce passes, some chest passes, maybe some free throws, and then they'll scrimmage, kind of practice the way you play. Well, golf, we don't do that. We hit 500 seven irons in a row or 100 eight irons in a row. Well, that never happens on the golf course, so in a tournament situation. So we give some ideas on how to do block practice, which is, you know, your typical technical hit a few eight irons in a row, and then some what's termed random practice, where you'd hit an eight iron to the flag on the right and then a driver to the trees over there on the left, or, you know, at the left edge of the bunker with a 3-wood over on the right. So you want to mix it up and practice a little bit more the way you play.
Kevin, it's been a pleasure to have you on, your first time at Yahoo Sports Radio. We look forward to catching up with you again real soon. Hopefully we'll see you out at Hilton Head, okay?
Great, thanks. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
You bet. Much more straight ahead as we step aside right here at YSR. Okay, we are cruising right along at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, with our college football preview. We opened up tonight's show talking about the Big 12 Conference. Well, we're going to close out tonight's show talking about the Big 12 Conference once again and providing the helping hand and giving his early projections in this highly anticipated 2014 season with the college football playoff as it makes its debut. It is time now to head to Norman, Oklahoma, with a senior writer from OU Insider and also with KREF 1400 AM, and that is our good friend James Hale. How are you, James?
Hey, I'm doing great. The only bad thing is I don't get to see you in person, because that's always a pleasure. But, you know, hey, I appreciate your friendship, and thanks for having me on. I appreciate that. And for all the OU fans out there, just check out OUinsider.com, and I think they will really enjoy what they see.
They certainly will, and James will talk some more about that. But let's start off talking, you know, typically when I have you on the program, we hit on OU, we talk about football, but let's step back and examine the strength of the Big 12 Conference. What, it's the 19th season. Is this conference, is it moving in the right direction? Because there's been so much chatter and talk about just the progression of the Pac-12.
Well, the Big 12, at least the members within it, believe that they have a great conference. They've been reluctant to add any teams to it because they feel like their conference is good enough as it is to keep moving forward. And they like splitting the money among 10 teams. And, of course, that money continues to grow with the college football playoff. And, you know, they're going to have record money distributed to the five super conferences. And then the six remaining conferences will also have a bigger piece of the pie. So I can't sit here and say financially that Oklahoma's making a bad decision. And since they've always been in contention through the old BCS system, and their scheduling was always so good that they were in contention to play in the national title, for the national title, or go
sure
to a major bowl,
yeah,
I have to believe that, you know, Oklahoma believes that they're doing the right things. Now, you know, Texas, you know, because people didn't like working with Texas, A&M left, Nebraska left, and Missouri left, and I don't think they're disappointed Colorado left. I think the Big 12 would have loved to have A&M remain a member, and, you know, they'd love to have Nebraska back, and Oklahoma fans would, so you could play Nebraska every other year or whatever, you know, or, you know, however it worked out. So, you know, it's interesting to me, because the next week the Big 12 will have their media day, and we'll get more of a idea of how everybody feels about the conference. But from everything that I get a feeling so far, they feel like they're doing the right thing with 10 teams. And what will change that, E, is if they have, let's say, an undefeated team at the end, and they still don't get in the Final Four because they don't have a postseason game. But Joe Castiglione, the outstanding AD for OU, has told me that they'll have to just see how that plays out. And if they find after a couple of years that not having a championship game is hurting them, they'll think of some other way to have that, whether that's to go ahead and have one among 10 members or look for a change in the NCAA rule that would allow them to do that or expand and bring two more teams in. You know, the money is so good with the playoff that I think that that the conference might look to expand in the future just because there's enough money to go around even if you expand to 12 teams. So I still think at some point they're going to expand and bring more teams. I say that just kind of feeling around and things, but it's not going to be in the next couple of years. They seem tickled pink to be right where they are. Uh-huh. So whether the nation believes that or not, that's what the conference members think.
Okay, you're listening to The Voice, the senior writer with OU Insider James Hale, one of our regular guests at YSR, the Big East Sports Show. And with Oklahoma coming off that huge Sugar Bowl win against Alabama, you look at Baylor. They made significant strides, emerging as a potentially a national title contender under Art Briles. That certainly overall, that really helps boost the stock about this conference.
Yeah, it does. And in the preseason poll, Oklahoma's number one, followed by Baylor. They're the only two teams to get first-place votes. Oklahoma got 47, Baylor 9. That's how I voted it as well. I voted Kansas State third. They are third. It's the middle of the pack where people really aren't sure who's going to emerge. For instance, I had TCU fourth. Well, the preseason poll, the rest of the media voted them down to seventh. They have Texas fourth. I'm not as high on Texas right now as I think I will be in a couple of years when Charlie Strong really has a chance to solidify his program, but I'm not sure who the quarterback is. Jonathan Gray's not. I don't know if he's healthy or not. Now, they'll play defense because Coach Strong knows how to coach defense, and they'll do it on their white side. I like Coach Wickline in the offensive line, but still, you know, I think they need Jonathan Gray and that quarterback to come through. Oklahoma State's fifth, and so just it comes down to whether you like Oklahoma State or Texas Tech. I went with State fifth and Tech sixth, but Oklahoma State has to rebuild a defense. But watch out for Tyreek Hill, who plays running back for Oklahoma State. He's the fastest player in the conference, and he's one of the fastest players in the country. And they can run the football at Oklahoma State. They'll always be able to do that. But can J.W. Walsh be that kind of quarterback that can get them to finish higher in the conference? So we'll see. And then, you know, I don't have a lot of hope for West Virginia, Iowa State, and Kansas. I'm not saying they'll be easy to play. They all have an individual star or two. They'll be well coached. Kansas was in a couple of games last year. They just didn't know how to finish. So Charlie Weiss doing some pretty good things there. But we'll see. And I think that's how the conference is going to shape up.
Okay, James, you mentioned Oklahoma, Baylor. What separates the Sooners from Baylor?
Defense. I mean, Oklahoma is going to have the best defense in the conference and one of the best defenses in the country. They continue to grow with that new scheme at the 3-4. And that's not only the players but the coaches who continue to visit with other coaching staffs and pro staffs that run the 3-4. Mike Stoops is well-connected. Jerry Montgomery knows a bunch of coaches. You know Bob does too, Bob Stoops. And so they can find people they can go and share ideas with. And Mike is, I think Mike this time around as a defensive coordinator is so much more creative and so much more into it than he was the first time around where he was sharing duties with Brent Venables, who's now the outstanding defensive coordinator at Clemson. I think Mike at this point in his career loves what he's doing. He's getting paid pretty handsomely, and he's getting a chance to really create a defense, and they'll come up with more packages. They've made a couple of moves. They put Geno Gresham at the jack. They've moved Stryker to the nickel. They've moved Julian Wilson, who was the nickel, to corner. They've gotten automatically bigger with those three moves at those three positions. And I think defensively, Oklahoma's a lot better than Baylor going in. Now, people will say, well, Baylor's better offensively, but they're not going to be that much better than Oklahoma. And I think by the end of the year, I'm not sure that you'll say that. But Bryce Petty is the offensive player, preseason player of the year. They add KD Cannon, who's got great speed outside. But the big difference going in, and the reason why Oklahoma's rated and such a decided favorite, is because boy, they play good defense.
Well, that Oklahoma-Baylor game, it's already sold out. You're talking about Oklahoma's their stout defense. So much chatter in terms of with the Bears and that they are loaded offensively. But what kind of strides and improvement have you seen in terms of with the Baylor Bears defensively?
Well, last year they had a really good defense. They just got bigger and stronger, and they played aggressively, and boy, they had a secondary that would knock your head off, and yeah, they just got better on defense. But the key thing is, will they be able to do that again this year? And that's what really separates a program. I've said this about Oklahoma State for years. It's one thing to be good, you know, for a couple of years, but if you have to fall off for a year or two, that's when your program proves that it's not as good as the elite programs in the country. So we'll see what Baylor comes up with. I know Art Briles, I know I'm going to hear next week that, hey, our defense has improved, and, you know, we've got this going and that going, and, you know, but we'll see. He'll have to convince me. They lost so many starters over there. And if they lose Petty, the season's over. Of course, if OU loses Trevor Knight, probably they're not going to have the great season that they thought. They don't have a backup quarterback that's taken a snap yet, unless Baker Mayfield somehow gets eligible, and he's still not eligible at this point. And OU, if Doriel Green Beckham gets eligible to play, if they NCAA rules he can play, and OU's putting together, you know, a waiver that package that they hope the NCAA will sign off on. Boy, Oklahoma just all of a sudden that's the only position they don't have experience in. And if they get him in there along with Sterling Shepard and whoever else emerges from the outstanding young crop of sophomores, redshirt freshmen, and freshmen they have, look out. You know, Oklahoma could really, really good.
A lot of questions in terms of will they be a playoff contender. Hey, James, we appreciate you joining us just for a short segment this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Look forward to catching up with you again real soon. Thanks, Jay.
Hey, thanks, E.
Okay, a special thank you to James Hale, the senior writer from OU Insider, our very own Sean Salisbury with Yahoo Sports Radio. Each and every week, Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment, Kevin Smells from the Ledbetter Golf Academy, Jeff Kaplan with NBA.com, and a very special guest tonight, Gary Patterson, TCU's head football coach. I'm Alyssa Walker-Campbell encouraging you not to drink and drive. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports. Join us online at Twitter, at eRadioSports.
Are we exposed? Security teams ask this every day. Vulnerabilities across network, cloud, AI, and OT silos hide the truth, and attackers are watching. Tenable unifies your tools, teams, and data so you can spot and close risks fast. Tenable's AI-powered exposure management gives teams one view of risk, helping them focus, take action, and close critical exposures fast. Visit Tenable.com. Tenable. Your exposure ends here.